When you need to refuel between meetings or running errands, or you just want a healthy snack that squashes your hunger, Wonderful Pistachios, which come in a variety of flavors and sizes, by the way, are the perfect choice to fill you up and keep you going throughout the day. Wonderful Pistachios is also a good source of protein and a zero-guilt snack. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, guys, which gives you over 10% of your daily value. And with flavors like salt and pepper, sweet chili, and seasoned salt in the shelled variety, options like chili roasted, sea salt, and vinegar or jalapeno lime in the no-shell variety, you're sure to please your taste buds while snacking healthy. So check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day. Quick math, beauties. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything just costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math and see how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Jillian. That's netsuite.com/Jillian. netsuite.com/Jillian. Hey guys, I know we're all working so hard to stay fit and healthy at home. So check out my app. I have free daily 7-minute workouts. Download the app. It's Jillian Michaels Fitness app. Download it. Do the 7-minute workouts. You don't need any equipment. There's total body workouts, ab workouts, leg workouts. You get a new one every single day. And if you want more, obviously there's a heck of a lot more in the app. There's over 1,000 different exercises. All of my DVD workouts are in the app. I can customize a workout for you in the app. There's freaking yoga, kickboxing, HIIT training, outdoor runs, bodyweight training, free weights. There are thousands of recipes, no matter what your diet preferences are. But at the very least, please do the 7-minute workouts for free.
Welcome to Keeping It Real Conversations with Jillian Michaels. Hello, Jillian Michaels. How are you today?
Hello, Schminders. I'm good. And today's conversation is with a doctor, a neuroendocrinologist, by the name of Robert Lustig. And we're going to be talking about his new book, which is called Metabolical, The Lure and the Lies of Processed Food, Nutrition, and Modern Medicine. And this guy's really an interesting guy. And what I love is that he subspecializes in neuroendocrinology, which is essentially a lot of the stuff we talk about on the show, at least tangentially, of thyroid hormone, leptin, ghrelin, human growth hormone, how hormones affect our metabolism and our weight. We've talked about it, you know, throughout the years. I wrote a book about it with an endocrinologist back in the day named Dr. Christine Darwin. And he has taken this, you know, this is a decade later, has dug in even deeper into the research. And what is interesting is that Dr. Lustig goes against some of my beliefs, which is another reason that I wanted to have him on, because he's like, I'm a calorie killer. I don't believe in calorie counting. You know, he talks about how he doesn't hate the keto diet. And what I find interesting, though, and I think that you guys will hear as the show goes on, is that there are different ways to approach it, which I find fascinating. He talks about how when you eat the way he suggests, you inherently don't overeat. But in my mind, that's calorie counting. But he's like, no, it has nothing to do with what goes past your lips. It has to do with what's getting absorbed in your gut. And then the foods are going to determine what gets absorbed and therefore how much energy you take in and utilize. I still say it's calorie counting because I still say it's how much energy you take in. But he's suggesting a completely different mechanism in the way those calories count. And he's clearly very, very well educated. So he makes a fantastic point. And it does have to do with, obviously, your food choices. The only thing for me is that, you know, you have to remember that you'll have a guy like Dr. William Lee come on, and he's talking about fighting cancer with food, right? So he's going to talk about things like purple potatoes and, you know, a variety of different berries and fruit, like foods that are going to have an impact on insulin, but not dramatically. So this is where I just want to throw out these caveats as you listen, because what Dr. Robert Lustig is trying to do, and you'll hear, is he's trying to reverse disease for people that have to do with metabolic syndrome. So that's a completely, right, he's looking at, all right, heart disease, high triglycerides, type 2 diabetes, and how this is impacting our health, whereas Dr. William Lee is not looking at that component. He's looking at what foods are going to shut off blood vessels that feed cancer cells. So this is where I want everyone to remember that, does this make any sense? Like, you've got two different beasts here and they can coexist. So that's what kind of makes me nervous about when doctors are like, well, I don't mind keto. Well, it does make sense if you're talking about something like fatty liver disease and heart disease, and it's being monitored by a doctor, which he goes on to talk about, right, very clearly how diets of that nature need to be monitored by medical professionals. And he'll explain, you know, he and I got into a conversation at another time about high protein diets. And I was like, well, is it bad or is it good? Because, you know, you've got people fighting about it. And he's like, well, depends on your kidneys, depends on your liver, depends if you're working out, depends if you're not working out. There are so many nuances to this, which is why I love his book so much. But it isn't as simple as high protein is good, branched chain amino is good. He goes on to talk about who it's good for and what the circumstances would be, right? And when it's bad. And this is where I can see how that would be so confusing. Does that make sense, Cindy? Like, I have to sit there and drill down on it.
I think it comes back to the one-size-fits-all medicine. And we're just not living in a one-size-fits-all
right.
world. And,
no.
You know, we can take the outline of a certain diet or way or lifestyle of eating, living, but really what it comes down to is everybody's body is different. We've been exposed to different pesticides. We've been exposed to different amounts of cigarette smoke, perhaps, in our living rooms when we were kids. Different microbiomes.
Yep, and that is massive. Your microbiome affects your insulin response so dramatically, because there was a study about two identical twins that had a completely different response, insulin response to foods, and they were identical twins.
Yeah.
And it had to do with how the differences in their microbiome, which will occur, of course, over a lifetime, what foods you're eating, what you're exposed to in the environment, not just the strains that we're born with.
Well, just think about something as simple as cilantro. I love it. Lori loves it. But the fact that I love it and the rest of my family hates it with a passion I have never heard toward anything edible from them. And so I didn't grow up with it, of course, but that is, apparently cilantro is one of those things that some people sort of taste soap and disinfectant, and
yes,
other people, you know, it's the same. There was a pheromone thing too, the Genome Project did, where I think 20% of women can smell this smell and 80% of men can smell it. And so our bodies are different. Even you know, if you're made up of the same stuff, you're not ultimately made up of the same stuff, I guess.
True. And how we live also impacts your body, which is going to require something different. So it's like, oh, well, if you're working out, then you need branched chain aminos. But if you're not working out, then those branched chain aminos end up damaging the hell out of the liver. Like, that's, your lifestyle is going to impact it. Although I would say, well, then work out. That'd be my answer. My answer will be, well, then obviously we all need to be working out, no?
Speaking of working out, a little while back, I saw you were back at the gym. Congratulations.
Oh, my gosh. I think it might have been open, but, like, outside. I don't know. I will tell you that I am so sore from the most basic crap And it just goes to show you how, if you, you know, because it's like a skip rope, push-ups, lunges, squats, skip rope, you know, sit-ups, this, the side lunge. I've been doing that for so long. And even though I try to mix it up, I mean, I do and I don't, right? Because you get in this rut and you do step-ups, but oh my God, it's like a leg press, a hamstring curl. I never use the machines that often, but to be able to do like a lat pull down and a seated row is just, it's like, I was so sore. And I thought,
that's amazing.
Okay, it's the variety, of course, right? Training differently is gonna, quote, shock the body, which is why you don't ever wanna get into a set routine. You do wanna mix it up. That's the reason people are like, well, how come you change the workouts and all the programs every couple of weeks? How come I only do two sets? How come you're always varying up? Why am I not sticking with the same exercises? It's like we're constantly trying to change the modalities, right? Am I using mobility? Am I using agility? Am I using power? Am I using speed? Am I using strength to train your chest, back, shoulders, quads? You know, how much weight? How many reps? How are we training? How are we training the muscles? Are we training the endurance fibers? Are we training, you know, big power? Like, did I just say big
power?
You
said big power.
Oh my God, that's not what I mean. Fast twitch, slow twitch. it's easy for me to do when I'm training it, but sometimes when you're on your own, you just don't want to think about it, right? And it's like,
oh my God. That's why I think Pilates stuck with me, because I get bored of doing the same thing. I'm really glad and lucky that doing the same thing is not better for you, because I do get bored. And I love when exercise is something that is different each day or each, you know, time you do it.
Yes, it's just really critical that you mix it up. Or you have a trainer that mixes it up for you with different moves, different reps, different weights, different exercises. And people, you know, someone asked me a question. It's like, well, if I'm doing these combination moves, so think of it now, like compound exercises, or think of something like a lunge with a bicep curl, right? Love those moves. Did a million home workouts with exercises just like that, because it's like, how do we be efficient? How do we burn the most calories? However, if you're gonna do a lunge and a bicep curl, you could lunge with, let's say, I'll use me, I'm an example, right? I could lunge with maybe 30s in each hand. It's gonna be heavy, but I could do it and I would get a killer lower body workout. But I can't bicep curl 30s in each hand. So someone's like, well, what's right and what's wrong? Both, you should do both. That's the answer, both are good. Mix it up. It's almost like saying, well, what's better for me? Should I have, you know, wild caught salmon for dinner tonight? Or should I have the, you know, the vegetable plate? Both are good. Have salmon one night, have the vegetable plate another. Now your goal will also determine, you know what I'm saying? Like if you want to build muscle, then yes, heavier weights. They'll say stress to the muscles, but your goal is going to determine, right? Like what you're going to gravitate more towards in this particular instance. Because if you want to lose weight, you're probably going to do better with things like the lighter weights, high reps, keep it moving, keep it rolling, keep it constant, get the HIIT intervals in there, just because I can utilize that to burn more calories over time, even though heavy weights will burn calories. But likely you're going to do the heavy reps and then you're going to rest for a second and then maybe do the biceps, which aren't going to burn as many calories, if that makes any sense. But yeah, both are good. Both serve a purpose. Variety is key. So yeah, it's great to be. I never thought I'd be so happy to be back at the gym. Oh my God, Cindy. Jeez. Wow. I don't even like working out. Want a fantastic piece of affordable jewelry for yourself or maybe for Mother's Day? Well, you got to check out Ana Luisa. They've got a 15% off Mother's Day sale going on now if you go to analuisa.com/JillianMD. One of the things I love about Ana Luisa is the fact that they offset 100% of their carbon emissions. There's also no big markup. They've got pieces starting at just $39. The Ana Gold necklace I got is exactly what I was looking for. It's chic, it's timeless, it's beautifully made, and it dresses up anything I'm wearing. So jump on this Mother's Day sale. The last day to guarantee standard shipping in the U.S. is May 5th. Ana Luisa is the perfect treat or gift, and they're currently running an exclusive Mother's Day sale. Get 15% off all products at analuisa.com/JillianMD. That's 15% off your entire order at analuisa.com/JillianMD. You're still running your business on QuickBooks? The bigger your company grows, the faster you sync with outdated software that just can't keep up. You don't have time for manual processes, multiple systems, or delays. NetSuite by Oracle is the way to run all of your key back office operations. Get visibility and control over your financials, inventory, HR, e-commerce, and more all in one place. NetSuite helps you automate your key business processes and close your books in a fraction of the time. Think days, not weeks. In fact, 93% of surveyed organizations increased visibility and control over their businesses since making the switch from QuickBooks to NetSuite. Right now, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind financing program only for those ready to graduate from QuickBooks. Head to netsuite.com/Jillian. That's special financing for you graduates at netsuite.com/Jillian. netsuite.com/Jillian. All right, we are back with Dr. Robert Lustig, and we are talking about his new book, Metabolical: The Lure and the Lies of Processed Food, Nutrition, and Modern Medicine. It's a powerful title. Dr. Lustig, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jillian. Very much appreciate it.
You know, I know you said earlier, call you Rob, but I'm having a hard time doing that because when you have the kind of accolades that you do and the career that you have had, I feel like you deserve your title of doctor and then some.
I don't deserve anything. I it's my job. That's what I do.
Well, speaking of, can you tell our audience a little bit about what you do? You are not just a New York Times bestselling author, but a pediatric neuroendocrinologist. And I mean, for those of us who don't work in fitness or nutrition or medicine, that's a big word. And can you make it simple for our audience?
Yeah, I couldn't even fit it on the door. I'm an endocrinologist, so I study glands and hormones in children. But in particular, I study how the brain controls those hormones and how hormones control the brain. So I'm very interested, for instance, in behavior and how hormones control behavior. I think you're probably aware that hormones have something to do with behavior. Well, it turns out hormones have a lot to do with obesity. Has a lot to do with, you know, feeding practices, what you want, what you like, how much you eat, when you don't eat, etc. And so I became very interested in the obesity problem in 1994, because that was the year that a hormone called leptin was discovered. And leptin is a hormone that your fat cell makes, circulates in your bloodstream, goes to your brain, and tells your brain, you know what? I've got enough energy on board. I don't need to eat everything in the grocery store. I don't need to eat everything in the refrigerator. I can calm down. In addition, it also says to the brain, I have enough energy on board so I can engage in expensive metabolic processes such as puberty and pregnancy. So this was a very big deal in the endocrinology field back in 1994. And so the big question was, well, what role does leptin play in general obesity? Well, it was at that exact same time I started to work at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital in Memphis, Tennessee. And we had a lot of patients who'd survived their brain tumors. And many of them, about 50% of them, even though they were not going to die of their brain tumor, they had become massively obese after the treatment, either from the surgery or the radiation. And the parents would come to me and say, this is double jeopardy. My child survived the tumor only to succumb to the therapy. This is unfair. And indeed it was. And so it was up to me to try to take care of these kids, to try to figure out how come this brain tumor or the aftermath led to them becoming massively obese. And I did my research, I did my literature evaluation, and it turned out that there was a fairly large literature on doing lesions in rat brains in an area of the brain called the hypothalamus, which was, you know, my purview as a neuroendocrinologist. And these rats, after these lesions, would become massively obese. So basically the same thing that these children were suffering from. And what the literature said was that the reason they became obese after this area was being lesioned was because they were now putting out enormous amounts of the hormone insulin. Now, insulin is the hormone that everybody knows is the diabetes hormone.
Right.
Right. Diabetics take insulin and it makes their blood glucose go down. That's true. And the reason it makes their blood glucose down is because it forces that glucose into fat cells for storage. Insulin is really the energy storage hormone. Insulin takes sugar in your blood you're not burning and puts it in fat for storage for a rainy day. Okay, that's insulin's job. Well, these kids were putting out enormous amounts of insulin. And so I said, well, I can't fix their brain. You know, leptin had just been discovered. I figured they couldn't see their leptin. I can't fix that because, you know, it's brain damage and I'm an endocrinologist. I'm not a neurosurgeon. What could I do? Well, so we gave these kids in a protocolized fashion a drug that specifically suppressed insulin release at the level of the pancreas. And lo and behold, they started losing weight.
Was that something like metformin or something of that nature?
No, it was called
octreotide. Because I know everybody listening is going to be like, oh, do I need this drug?
Right. So it's not metformin. Metformin works in a different place. This had to work at the pancreas. Metformin works at the liver.
Okay.
So we very specifically needed it to work at the pancreas. So we gave them this drug. It's called octreotide. Normally, it's used to treat growth hormone secreting tumors of the pituitary. But it also suppresses insulin. And lo and behold, these kids started losing weight. But even more importantly, they started being physically active themselves. These were kids who sat on the couch, ate Doritos, and slept. They were like lumps on a log. They were gaining weight, and they lost interest in everything around them.
So it's a bit of a chicken and an egg conversation then.
Well,
so
yes.
It's like you light this fire, you ignite their ability to feel like, okay, I can lose weight, there's hope, they're seeing results, and then that's motivating them in some way to be more physical.
I don't think so. I actually think that because they were not storing it, because we got their insulin down, they had the energy on board to burn it.
Gosh, I see what you're saying. Biochemically,
biochemically,
they were changed
absolutely.
In a way they felt they had the ability to be more physical and less depressed, it sounds like.
That's right. Because these kids would actually turn around in terms of their behavior within a week. They hadn't lost any weight yet. So the apocryphal story of patient number one, the very first patient I treated with octreotide back in 1995. I told the mother, you know, give me a call. If anything goes wrong, I will see you in 2 weeks. Well, she calls me up in 1 week, frantic on the phone, and says, Dr. Lustig, something's happening. And I'm going, oh, God, adverse event, shut
course.
Down the study, go to jail. I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Oh,
I go, what happened? And she goes, well, normally we would go to Taco Bell and she would eat 5 tacos and an enchilada and she'd still be hungry. And we just went to Taco Bell and she ate 2 tacos and she was full and she just vacuumed the house.
Wow. Okay.
So this was before she'd had any chance to lose weight. It was only 1 week into it. It had nothing to do with feeling better about herself. This was a biochemical change. That because instead of storing it, she had that energy in her bloodstream to burn, and so she was able to do so. And we saw this consistently. 2 kids started lifting weights at home. 1 became a competitive swimmer. 1 became the manager of his high school basketball team, you know, running around collecting all the basketballs. And we actually did a double-blind placebo-controlled trial after that, where we built a quality of life questionnaire into the study and showed that the lower we got their insulin, the better their quality of life, demonstrating to us that the biochemistry drives the behavior. So everyone thinks that obese people are gluttons and sloths. Well, turns out the same reason they're obese is the same reason they're gluttons and sloths, and it's the insulin. When
Does
you control
become,
the
though,
insulin, it gets
okay,
better.
So then my question, though, it sounds almost like this, like a vicious cycle, because
yes.
you start to become overweight, and then your biochemistry changes, which then gears you to become less active and more overweight, and it's almost like this impossible cycle to break out of. It sounds to me much like the way a psychiatrist describes depression. It's like something happens, you become situationally depressed, then you can become clinically depressed, and then your brain chemistry changes. It sounds almost like that. But the question then becomes, how do you break the cycle? And is that what metabolical is about?
So the answer is, that was what my first book, Fat Chance, was about, is how to break that cycle. Because you're absolutely right. There is a vicious cycle that of leptin resistance. So the leptin doesn't work. So your brain thinks you're starving. So you end up eating more to generate a higher leptin, but your brain is still resistant. So you still can't see it. So your brain still thinks you're starving. And so you end up in this consumption reduction in activity, you know, a vicious cycle. That's exactly right. And so my 2013 book said that insulin is the driver of that vicious cycle. And the only thing that works is to get the insulin down.
Okay.
And when you get the insulin down, and that's why metformin does work in some people, because it works on the liver to get the insulin down. Not when you have a brain tumor, but when you have a different problem called metabolic syndrome.
Which is the beginning of type 2 diabetes.
That's right. So there are two different phenomena here. There's one where the pancreas is the cause of the high insulin, in which case octreotide worked. And there's another one where the liver is the problem, in which case the metformin works. And we showed that it depends on who you are. And you have to do some lab tests and a glucose tolerance test to figure out who you are.
Oh my gosh. I actually have never heard that. And I have been fortunate enough to work with many endocrinologists. I've never heard that it depends on who you are. Where if it's pancreas or liver.
Yep.
With regard to them. But doctors will just throw, because this is why, by the way, for everyone listening, you have to go to a specialist. Because I know doctors that will just throw metformin at patients, and they're not endocrinologists.
Right.
Or they'll prescribe drugs for depression, and they're not psychiatrists. I mean, I'm sure you see this all the time.
Right.
I've never heard that before, ever.
Well, so it turns out that if you take the entire obese population of the United States, about 20% of those obese people are metabolically healthy.
Okay,
they
meaning
do
hormonally,
not have,
biochemically. No,
yep.
Nothing's wrong there.
Right. They will live a completely normal life, die at a completely normal age, not cost the taxpayer a dime. They even have normal length telomeres, the edges of the chromosomes that predict cellular and therefore, you know, human aging. Okay, these 20% are not the problem. It's the 80% who are metabolically ill that are the problem. But here's the issue. Yes, it is true that 80% of the obese population are metabolically ill. So is 40% of the normal weight population.
Right.
They have the exact same diseases as do the obese. Normal weight people get type 2 diabetes, hypertension, lipid problems, cardiovascular disease, cancer, dementia, polycystic ovarian disease, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Also, they just get it at a normal weight. And what we have learned is that it's that liver fat, that non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which is now 45% of all American adults, that is driving that liver to be dysfunctional. And that's the reason that you get the insulin resistance from that ultimately leads to metabolic syndrome and all these diseases. You have to clear the liver fat. And metformin will help although it won't do it all by itself. Basically, that's where the food comes in. And that's what Metabolical is about.
Doc, this is a perfect opportunity to take a break. We will be right back with Dr. Robert Lustig, and we are talking about his new book, Metabolical, The Lure and the Lies of Processed Food, Nutrition, and Modern Medicine. This is pretty exciting. I cannot wait to get into this next subject. I think my Third Love bra is so comfortable and fits me better than any other bra because it's literally designed to do that. First of all, they use the measurements of millions of women to design bras with all-day comfort and support. Then there's the fitting room quiz. They call it a personal shopper for your boobs, people, because it focuses on size, breast shape, current fit issues, and your personal style. So you get bras and underwear that are perfect for you. Plus, the whole time, fit stylists are available for one-on-one chats to answer any questions, and you get to do it all from your home. The fitting room has already helped 18 million women find their true bra size. Third Love knows your one true fit is out there. So right now, they're offering my listeners 20% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/Jillian now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 20% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/Jillian for 20% off today. thirdlove.com/Jillian. Quick math, beauties. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything just costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math and see how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Jillian. That's netsuite.com/Jillian. netsuite.com/Jillian. We are back with neuroendocrinologist Dr. Robert Lustig talking about his new book, Metabolical, The Lure and the Lies of Processed Food, Nutrition, and Modern Medicine. And Doc, in the break, you and I were just touching upon how I have been hearing from a variety of different registered dietitians and other doctors that I've worked with throughout the years that, oh, the liver's going to be the key, the liver's going to be the key. But then you hear about, well, microbiome, and then you hear, you know, all these different components and elements. And then you finally wrote the book, and you were just telling me how you tried to take all of these different strands and unite them. Can you get back to that and elaborate on that for the audience?
Well, so in the book, I asked the question, and, you know, this is the question everyone's asking, what is healthy? What does it mean? No one knows. The FDA doesn't know. The USDA doesn't know. And most doctors don't know. You know, Michael Pollan famously said 7 words, right? Eat food, not too much, mostly plants, right? Well, there's that's 3 clauses, 7 words. And it turns out that every single one of those clauses is a little bit of a problem. So food, Cheetos, well, is it food or is it not food? All right. Not too much. Like, how do you do that? And why is everybody like having a problem not being able to do that? And finally, mostly plants. Now, I'm going to be very honest with you. You can eat mostly plants, but you know what? Coke, Doritos, and Oreos are all plants. They're vegan.
Corn,
so
soy.
That doesn't answer the question either.
I never even thought of it like that, but you're absolutely right. Sorry, go on.
So I said, you know, what is healthy? And I distilled it, when you look at all the data, when you look at all the empiric evidence that we have, and the liver, and the microbiome, basically what I came down to was 6 words, 2 clauses. Protect the liver, feed the gut. So protect the liver from what? Well, protect the liver from fructose, the, you know, sweet molecule in sugar, which actually gets metabolized like alcohol. protect it from branched chain amino acids, which the liver will take the amino group off and become organic acids and flood the mitochondria, causing mitochondrial dysfunction, protect it from things like glyphosate and heavy metals, etc. And then finally, feed the gut. Feed the gut what? Well, turns out the gut eats what you eat. The question is, how much did you get versus how much did they get? So you've got 10 trillion cells in your body, but you got 100 trillion bacteria in your gut. They got to eat something. And if you don't feed them, guess what they eat? They eat the mucin layer right off your intestinal epithelial cells to stay alive, which then causes irritable bowel syndrome, inflammatory bowel disease, autoimmune disease, leaky gut, and metabolic syndrome. So you got to feed your gut. Now, the question is, what do they like to eat? And the answer is they like to eat fiber. Right. Soluble fiber in particular, but all fiber. And fiber is also there to help protect your liver, because the soluble and insoluble fiber, say in an apple, forms a gel on the inside of your duodenum, the first part of your intestine. So the insoluble fiber is like the lattice work, like the fishnet, if you will. The soluble fiber is what plugs the holes in that lattice work, like the kelp, if you will. And between the two of them, now, you know, things can't pass across very easily, which means that your liver is protected from the tsunami of all of that glucose, fructose, starch, branched chain amino acids, everything coming at it all at once, which it can't handle. Your liver has a capacity to be able to metabolize what you take in, but it has a limit. And if you go above that limit, then you start getting sick. The dose determines the poison. Well, if you consume fiber, you are protecting that liver, in which case then what you're eating goes further down the intestine where the microbiome can chew it up. So even though you ate it, you didn't get it. They did. And you're actually helping support the good bacteria in your gut. And therefore, they're not eating the mucin layer off your intestinal epithelial cells. In addition, you have bacteria in your colon that make short-chain fatty acids out of soluble fiber, butyrate and propionate, and these have been shown to be immune-suppressive, particularly for COVID, and also anti-inflammatory and anti-insulin. So you keep your insulin down. And of course, the faster the food moves through the intestine, which is what fiber does, it basically greases the skids, the quicker you get your satiety signal. So there's your Michael Pollan's not too much. So, in fact, if you protect the liver and you feed the gut, you will live a very long time. That is what is healthy. And any food that does both is healthy. The problem is those foods are called real food.
Right.
Any food that does neither is poison. And those foods are called processed food. And any food that does one or the other but not both, say, for instance, apple juice, because it still has soluble fiber, but all the insoluble fiber has been removed, so you still flood the liver, ends up being somewhere in the middle. And that's what the empiric data show. Now, if we ate based on these two precepts, we would basically put metabolic syndrome in the garbage can. But we don't. And the reason is because the processed food industry, that's not what they're selling.
Right. Doc, hold on, I want to backtrack for a second here. So we talk about insulin, right? And that's the trigger, and then it sets off leptin resistance, and it has this, this chain reaction of hormonal insanity, it sounds, you know, which is linked to all these diseases.
But
then you've got people turn around and say, oh, okay, well, keto is the way forward.
Yep.
And that's what one would think. But a diet like keto, you just said, you just talked about branched chain amino acids. I mean, those are like lauded in fitness.
Right.
I mean, people are like, I want branched chain aminos. I got to rebuild my muscles. Protein. And people like yourself and geneticists like Dr. David Sinclair talk about how too many branched chain aminos are dangerous. So then is that, so when I go, I don't want insulin, I'm going to go no carb. Would the downside then be you don't have the fiber and you've got too much BCAAs? Can you talk a little bit about why that's not the answer? Because those two things are now linked.
Right. So you've actually brought up two separate phenomena in one question, and I've got to split them to make a head or tail of it. But I mean, okay. They're both good questions. One has to do with keto, and the other one has to do with branched chain amino acids.
Yes,
they don't necessarily mix, but they could, but they don't necessarily have to. So let's talk with keto first, okay? Now, I believe in the ketogenic diet, and I say so in the book. I am not anti-keto. In fact, I use the ketogenic diet for my most severely insulin-resistant patients in our pediatric obesity clinic at UCSF. So I am not in any way anti-keto. In fact, okay. I'm pro-keto. I'm pro-keto. Yeah. However, for keto to work, you have to stay keto. And that's
really?
The problem. But yeah. So as soon as you basically go off it, you have upped your insulin. So the ketogenic diet works for two reasons. Okay? They're both good reasons. One is it gets the insulin down. And I've said you got to get the insulin down because the only two things that make insulin go up are refined carbohydrate and sugar. And those are both, you know, missing from the ketogenic diet. So that's good. But the second reason that the ketogenic diet works is because beta-hydroxybutyrate, the primary ketone that you generate with a ketogenic diet, is a signaling molecule. It activates sirtuins in the cells, which then activate mitochondria. So you increase mitochondrial capabilities, you increase numbers of mitochondria, and you increase their efficiency, all good. There's nothing bad about that. But in order to do that, you have to have a beta-hydroxybutyrate level. Now, if you're on the ketogenic diet and you're fastidious and you're watching it and you are being very careful and you are really, really, you know, paying attention, all good. And there are ways to do that.
Even if it's all that protein, so much high protein?
Well, there are some people whose livers can't handle it, but that's infrequent. There are also some people who end up with an enormously high triglyceride because they have a dyslipoproteinemia, in which case then they end up going, getting pancreatitis because of the high triglyceride. So triglyceride-induced pancreatitis can happen on a ketogenic diet in the wrong patient also. So it really needs to be medically monitored for these two reasons.
What about all the foods you're also cutting out? Things like...
Right.
Apple, citrus, a variety of healthy carbohydrates with keto. And that goes with the fiber, though. No, that you just talked about.
And you need
so
fiber. And you still need fiber. And the point is, though, that ketogenic diet does not mean you don't take in fiber. Green vegetables have loads of fiber and very little in the way of absorbable carbohydrate. So, in fact, a ketogenic diet with green vegetables on the side is perfectly rational, and I'm totally for it. The biggest issue is that most people who go keto basically eschew the fiber, and they basically
and
just go with the meat.
Right.
Okay. And then they're just on the carnivore diet. And, you know, that's not as good as being on a ketogenic diet that has a requisite fiber. So now if you consume fruit, now you're consuming fructose, et cetera, you know, you're getting some carbohydrate. Then the question is, how much fiber, and is the fiber being destroyed? If you're putting it in a smoothie machine, it's a disaster because you have destroyed the insoluble fiber. You have basically cut the holes in the fish net, and the carbohydrate's going to flood the liver, and that's going to generate an insulin response. And now you're not on the ketogenic diet anymore. So that's the big issue with the ketogenic diet. Now, having said that, the vegan diet can be done properly, and I'm a fan of that as well, provided you do it properly. Now, there are so many people who are on vegan diets who don't do it properly.
I get what you're saying.
They're missing their vitamin supplements, et cetera. So neither of them is like the perfect diet all by itself, and you have to actually pay attention. And, of course, people don't. That's the real problem.
Okay. So, but then, Doc, you talk about BCAAs, branched chain amino acids, like that. These are considered like wonder foods. But then I started to hear different things, like what you're saying about how too many branched chain amino acids can, you know, throw off your mTOR metabolic pathways and damage your longevity genes. And it's like, but that's in protein. So then it's like, then it sort of throws you off. Right.
Well, let me explain. So if you are a bodybuilder, if you are pumping iron, if you are building muscle, if you're watching a Jillian Michaels video, you need those branched chain amino acids because muscle is composed, 20% of muscle is branched chain amino acids.
Right.
So, you know, and you have to consume them. Branched chain amino acids, leucine, isoleucine, valine are all essential amino acids. Your body can't make them. You have to consume them. And so if you're building muscle, you have to take them in. And so that's why bodybuilders will take in protein powder and, you know,
add it to, BCAAs.
And for those people who are building muscle, that's, quote, a good thing, unquote. But what if you're a mere mortal like me? Okay? That's not building muscle. What if you're just eating a lot of meat? Okay? Especially corn-fed beef, which is very high in branched chain amino acids, which, of course, is why the meat is marbled, is because that animal has metabolic syndrome. That animal ate so many branched chain amino acids that it actually laid down fat in the liver and in the muscle. We just kill it before it gets sick. And I actually have a picture in the book of Argentinian beef, Italian beef, both of which consume grass. And then, of course, U.S. grade A prime choice corn-fed beef, which is all marbled. That's metabolic syndrome. So what if you're a mere mortal like me and you take in excess branched chain amino acids? Your body has no place to store them other than muscle. And if you're not building it, then you're not storing it. So what happens to the excess? The excess goes to the liver. The liver takes the amino group off. Now they become branched chain organic acids, for instance, oxaloacetate, which then enter the Krebs cycle, which is the way you make ATP, you know, to burn in your cells. Yeah. The cycle can only run so fast. It has a fixed maximum velocity. So you have now overwhelmed the Krebs cycle's capacity to metabolize those branched chain organic acids that came from the amino acids. And so the liver has no choice but to throw off the excess as citrate, which exits the mitochondria through a process called the citrate shuttle. Now that citrate is there and gets built into fat. So three enzymes, ATP citrate lyase, acetyl-CoA carboxylase 1, fatty acid synthase, takes the citrate that got the branched chain amino acids threw off and turns it into liver fat. And that liver fat will either raise your triglycerides, which is a problem for heart disease, or it will precipitate in the liver. Now you've got fatty liver disease, and now you've got insulin resistance, and now you've got the beginnings of all the chronic metabolic diseases we've just talked about. So bottom line is branched chain amino acids are good if you're building muscle and not so good if you're not. And so that hopefully explains the issue.
And all of this is in the book. I want to be clear. So it's all in the book for everybody, listening when you're like, well, how do I know? How am I going to know? This is all in the book. And the book is pretty significant, about 300 plus pages, so we couldn't possibly cover.
Well, let me make a comment. The one thing that's missing is the bibliography, and it's not because it's missing. It's online, and the reason is because there are 1,054 references to the primary literature, and so if you go to metabolical.com, you can find all the references based on page number. And so you can click on it, and it will take you directly to the primary source material. So this book is completely, totally, medically valid and vetted. So, you know, for all of you who want to come at me saying, you know, I don't believe this, you know, the bibliography is there to be used.
You talk about the influence of big food, big pharma, and big government.
You bet.
And can you talk a little bit about how these elements have poisoned the well of our food supply or the way we think about nutrition now?
Yeah. So each of them, I basically accuse of committing something, a new term that I have coined for the book called immoral hazard. Now, if you're in the medical field, the concept of moral hazard is something we learn about like on first day of medical school. So moral hazard is like the economic version of Schadenfreude. taking delight in the misery of others.
Wow.
The insurance industry is moral hazard. Okay? The insurance industry, so, you know, all those insurers out there, they were delighted when you got sick. They were happy when you got sick. And the reason was because they made their money via the casino model, pay to play and set the rates. So the sicker you got, the higher they raised your rates, and the more they said no, okay, to keep their money. So that's the casino model. And, you know, when you're at the casino, it's one thing, but when it's your life in danger, you know, it's a very big difference. So that's moral hazard. The insurance company didn't make you sick, but they sure were glad when you got sick.
Oh my God. Okay.
Immoral hazard is when the industry actually rigs the game in order to make you sick and then profit off your sickness. That's immoral hazard. That's what tobacco did. Okay? They rigged the game to make you sick and to profit from it. Opioids, okay, Purdue Pharma, another example. Turns out, climate change. Now we know, we have the Exxon papers, and we know what's going on. So all of these are guilty of immoral hazard. What I am saying in this book is that the food industry has done that, the pharma industry has done that, and in fact, government has done that, and they've all done it in their own ways. They didn't necessarily start out thinking that's what they were going to do, but that's what they ended up doing. And I explain in the book how each of those three industries have basically come to their current situation and how that is affecting Americans negatively in terms of their health and their wallet.
And what you can do about it, though. You give very simple steps of how you can take your power back with awareness and simple action steps that anyone can take. And that's what I love so much, I mean, about Fat Chance and what you do, and now with Metabolical. I'm listening to this and I'm thinking to myself, okay, hold on. Can I turn all of this around without a medication kickoff? You know, or do I need to see my doctor and I need a drug to help me? And Doug, to be honest, I cannot tell you. I must get at least, I don't know, 10 questions a week. And I get a lot of questions, so to put it in perspective, but I'd say 10% of them are, I'm eating right, I'm working out, and it's barely coming off. So then I say, okay, let's check, you know, how much are you moving? How much are you actually eating? And then at that point, I'm like, I think you need to see an endocrinologist, because if something is stuck and it's not moving the way that it should, then there's something off hormonally. Like, how do we know when we need drugs to get this thing moving or we don't? Like, what would you say to that person? Because I get that question all the time.
So, Jillian, you just basically espoused the big fallacy. Okay, and I'm going to just call you on it.
Okay,
whether you believe it or not is irrelevant, but they believe it. They believe it. You just said, well, I'm eating right and I'm exercising and it's not coming off. That's basically, you eat too much, you exercise too little, because it's about calories.
Right.
It's all about calories. Reduce your calories and your weight will go down. This is the biggest fallacy in the history of modern medicine.
Works every time I put someone through it, except in these rare cases where their hormones seem to be slowing down. Like, they'll lose, but slowly.
The reason is because of leptin resistance. So as
but
long as
you're-
But
if we switched their food and they ate well and they were moving more, wouldn't that inherently start to reverse leptin resistance? Like,
if you get the insulin down. If the insulin comes down, insulin blocks leptin. So the lower the insulin, the better your brain can see the leptin. If your brain can see the leptin, then your mitochondria work better to burn it off and you feel better. However, just because you reduce your calories doesn't mean your insulin went down. And the reason is because your liver is still filled with fat.
But if they're exercising,
Not necessarily.
Come on, Doc. Exercise is one of the best ways to help resensitize the body to insulin.
It is. I'm not saying no, but if you've got so much liver fat that it's, you know, it's so severe that it's actually caused inherent problems in terms of fibrosis and scarring, then just doing the exercise is not going to be enough. In addition, in the book, I basically state very categorically, you cannot outrun a bad diet. And the reason is, and the reason is because there are eight, count them, eight subcellular pathologies that are driving all of chronic metabolic disease. And they are not the diseases we currently, you know, identify, like type 2 diabetes, hypertension, lipid problems, cardiovascular disease, cancer, dementia. Okay, those are the symptoms of these pathologies. Here are the eight pathologies in order. Okay, I'm not going to be able to have time to explain them all. The book does. Yes. Here they are. Glycation, oxidative stress, mitochondrial dysfunction, insulin resistance, membrane instability, inflammation, methylation, and autophagy. These are the eight subcellular pathologies that belie all chronic disease. Only five of them are amenable to exercise.
Okay.
That's
with
good.
That said,
so okay, but exercise is good, but it's not enough.
But if you're, but then wouldn't the argument be still, don't overeat, move the body more, and use common sense with food choices? But in this case, we're talking about common sense being what you were talking about of eating to support the liver and eating to feed the gut.
Correct.
Because if we take away the notion that, you know, well, if we say it's not about calories, then if somebody ends up eating a ton of food, like, but it, we, I, that, Do you see what I'm saying? If we take that away, then they end up overeating and thinking like, oh, I can just eat like crazy because this isn't what it's about as long as I'm feeding my gut or I'm, you know, keeping the insulin down.
If you eat food with its inherent fiber,
you won't overeat.
You will not overeat.
But isn't that in a way controlling calories unto itself?
Of course, absolutely. But not because you're counting them. But because you're letting your body work to your benefit. Of course
it is. To not overeat them.
Okay. But if you take a tally sheet of calories, that's irrelevant because it's not how many calories that pass through your lips. It's how many calories that pass through your intestine. Because if you ate it, but you didn't absorb it, guess what? You didn't get it. And about 25 to 30% of all the calories you consume were not for you, they were for your bacteria. And the question is, how do you alter that partitioning? And the answer is you do it with fiber. So when you eat foods with its inherent fiber, about 30 to 35% of those calories never got absorbed, never generated a glucose response, never reached the liver. Instead, went down to feed the bacteria, and the bacteria, therefore, are happy, not generating cytokines, not causing irritable bowel, not leading to leaky gut, and also you're getting an anti-inflammatory and anti-insulin response out of the short chain fatty acids. All of that being good, but it has nothing to do with the calories that you ate. It had to do with whether or not those calories got absorbed or not. So the whole concept of calories is measured at the lips. Who cares? It's irrelevant. And in fact, it doesn't work. And that's what I'm calling out in the book. My job is to kill the calorie. And if this book doesn't kill the calorie, then it's basically unkillable. And, you know, we will be left to our, you know, respective fates.
But you are still saying, though, that you cannot overconsume. And that you're suggesting that when you eat this way, inherently it controls how much and what we consume.
When your insulin comes down, yes.
Right.
The point is that if you have fat in your liver, it sort of doesn't matter what else you do. And the biggest problem with fat in your liver is you can't see it on the scale. So when you stand on the scale, what are you measuring? You're measuring three compartments at once. You're measuring the subcutaneous or big butt fat, which is the majority of it, which for the most part is metabolically inert. Cosmetically undesirable, but metabolically inert.
Right.
You're also measuring the visceral fat, the belly fat, which is much more dangerous than the subcutaneous fat.
Between and the organs.
Between the organs. And then finally, you are measuring the liver fat. And that liver fat, you can't even see on the scale. If you have 500 grams of extra fat in your liver, that's 1 pound. All right. You can't tell that that 1 pound was in the liver versus, say, in your booty.
But right? can you, though, if I went to the doctor and you ran my labs, you could,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. And that's okay. The point of the book is to figure out where that fat is and whether that fat is actually causing you metabolic problems and then what to do about it.
I got
Chapter 9. Just remember, I mean, for your audience, okay, it's not the fat you can see that matters. It's the fat you can't see. And in particular, the fat in your liver you can't see. And the question is, can your doctor see it? And the answer is, your doctor can see it if your doctor knows what they're doing. So the doctors need to read the book in order to figure it out. Because I guarantee you, it is not taught in medical school. Because I know, because I'm the one who had to teach it.
I understand completely. And you can have this fat whether you're a size 4 or a size 14.
Or a size 44.
I got it. Everybody, the book is available tomorrow, actually. It's called Metabolical, The Lore and the Lies of Processed Food, Nutrition, and Modern Medicine by Dr. Robert Lustig. Doc, you've been fantastic.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Jillian.
All right, guys, we want you to subscribe to the podcast so you can stay up to date with our life-changing and life-saving information. So on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you're listening, click that subscribe button.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.